Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Getting Down to Brass Tacks for Tuesday, June 26. I'm Sanka Price, and I'll be your host until 1 p.m. My producer is Mr. Dennis Johnson, and he's the first voice you hear when you call us today at 43-41790. As we speak, the service to celebrate the life of Sir Fred Gollop is ongoing at Coral Ridge Christ Church. Sir Fred acted as Governor General several times during his record stint, 14 years as President of the Senate. But for us at Starcom and the nation and our parent company, One Caribbean Media, Sir Fred was the chairman. He was the guiding hand behind the formation and growth of the nation and Starcom, and one of the chief architects of One Caribbean Media. Sir Fred also served as the director of several companies and different businesses in Barbados. May he rest in peace. He was really a titan. For today, we have a lot happening. One of the interesting things there on the front page of today's Nation is talk about fake taxis, you know, about professionals, doctors, lawyers, and others who have taxi plates. And so that has been going on for a while. And it is really good to see that it's being highlighted, because it's some people just cheat the system all the time. Of course, one of the interesting comments we saw over the weekend was from Pastor Vincent Wood, taking a stand and on the whole thing of same-sex marriages. And that came in the wake, of course, of the Gay Pride March that is going to take place later this year. And of course, we have the ongoing situation on the South Coast, where the repairs are being done. And if you're on social media like I am, you can see the positive comments coming, that the fact that, yes, there's some dislocation, but it seems that things are actually starting to work at long last. But I would hasten to add to everyone that this fix is going to take a while. So despite the fact that you're not seeing any sewage on the streets, remember, it is just they're now really trying to get to the bottom of the problem, but there's a long, long way to go. Anyhow, I want to hear from you, and I would really like us to have some conversations today, not just hit and runs. So we'll take our first call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Price.
Good morning.
Yeah. A couple of things here. The first, getting some, not really complaints, but some concerns about the deposit fees. Am I correct in saying it's $140?
Yes, $70.
Right. Now, imagine that normally this time of the year when school was up.
It's not a departure fee. It's an additional fee. The departure fee is still there.
Okay. Is that an additional fee onto what you have paid before?
Mm-hmm.
So there's $140 every time you go through Grady Evans Airport. And this is per person. Am I right?
Yeah. And do you know when it's going to start?
Pardon me?
Do you know when it's going to start?
No. When is it about to start?
But you're getting concerned and questions about it. It's supposed to start, I think, in October.
In October?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So that would not affect the people who will be taking vacation this year to go overseas.
Yeah, but, you know, in all due respect, if you're going to raise an issue like this, you should get all your facts lined up before you call. Okay? Instead of being so alarmist.
I was not too certain of when this would start.
Well, you could just check.
But, you know, seeing as it may, it still is going to be a problem. I tell you what,
a problem to whom?
The people that will be traveling.
Which people?
Barbadian people.
You think so?
Of course.
How much does a ticket cost to go to Trinidad? Do you know?
No, I don't know that right now. Many years ago, you could ask me that. I could tell you it was $200.
Well, I know. Look, Skip, I used to go to Trinidad for $90. Okay?
I know about that.
And in those days, It was in Scarborough, Tobago. It was called TITAS. Dennis is smiling because TITAS was Trinidad and Tobago Air Services. It was a turboprop plane. All right? It was $90. It used to fly directly from Barbados to Scarborough. All right? it's now going to cost you close to $700 to go to Trinidad. Now, if you're going to pay $700 to go from here to Trinidad, an extra $140 is not really going to be either here nor there if you could afford the $700.
Yes, if you're going by yourself.
If you were going to look at me.
By yourself, but if you're taking three or four children with you, it's going to be a hell of a
lot. And the same way that you would save for the tickets to buy that, it's an additional burden. But the point is that it's one of those things that you will do it. Where, sir, I think that this issue is not so much local. I look at it more as and more of international impact on people coming here. And I'm going to read for you and all listeners, of course, something that someone from England sent to me. The person said, am I really reading your new budget correctly? Another $70 on top of the UK's airport tax just now to leave the island? Isn't there already a fee built in, which we used to hand over when checking in anyway? I know the island's broke, but that's really not going to do it any favors whatsoever. Far too much. And it will make people think twice about choosing Barbados, I'm sure. It's not value for money at the moment, so that will make it even less so. And even the rich people get ticked off being overcharged. I'm even more, the exchange rate is in the floor for us here in England. I have Bulgaria to look forward to, and it's £16 a night to stay in Central Sofia apartment to look forward to, and the Black Sea. The weather is lovely and hot. So it's really too much money. The person also goes on to make the point that if they're going to move their entire family of four or five, it would come to about $350. And when you look at that as against paying $70 just to leave Barbados, then it's really too expensive. So your point, I take your point, and it has some merit. I see it more with the implications it can have on travel by tourists leaving Barbados. Because when they are going to budget for a trip here, especially from England, where the value of the pound is really probably at an all-time low. It's too little these days. $2 little Barbados these days. It's $2.50 something or $2.60 something like that. I can see the impact there. But in terms of a person leaving Barbados, yes, it's going to impact them, but it's like an inconvenience. Man, geez, I got to pay this extra money. But the same way that you will find that $1,000 or $1,100 to go to Miami, you will budget that extra $140 to go to pay. So, but I see it more from the tourism perspective, where a person has to put all that money together to travel to Barbados. And as you rightly said, if there's a family of three or more, and you have to include that cost, then the impact is going to be major. And those are foreign dollars.
What would it cost the price of Trinidad airline tickets to be so high?
It's taxes, sir. And it's not only Barbados. Look, if the taxes were not so high at all of our regional airports, the price of a ticket would be much less. I mean, I remember years ago in Trinidad, it used to have the breakdown, all sorts of security taxes. I remember that. Well, because I remember making a joke to a friend of mine that, Jesus, Trinidad got all different levels of security. You know, there's airport security, then there's customs this, and then there's immigration. All sorts of security costs and that sort of stuff involved. But they're just taxes. There's a whole bunch of taxes heaped on to keep those tickets expensive. But really and truly, I don't see why we should be paying more than at the most, even with the price of oil being what it is, I don't see why we should be paying more than $350, $400 max to go to Trinidad.
Uh-huh.
It's really ridiculous in my view. Okay. But that is it. Anyhow, sir, we got a whole set of calls and we got to take a commercial break. So we'll talk to you another time. Have a great day. Welcome back to Brass Tacks.
Thank good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you today?
I good. How are you?
I'm well.
I miss you.
You miss me?
Yes, I miss you.
It's good to be missed. I hope I was missed for the right reasons.
No, I play a talking person. You don't. You can't miss them.
Okay.
That's why I miss you.
All right.
Tell it like it is. Mr. President, I got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You went into the supermarket lately?
You're seeing increased prices?
Yes.
Yes. Me too.
Oh, I know that. Well, let me tell you something. If you go out my supermarket and you got Johnson Supermarket, Johnson Supermarket got a different price to mine, and you look for the cheapest way out. That is number one. And number two, don't worry to tell that the NIRL and then the foolishness comes straight to the point. That's one. Let me go on because I was going to go on. The water authority, it didn't really make the water went off. So I realized when I get this morning for the rest to get ready for work, there wasn't no water. So I said, there's something like it gone wrong. Well, you know, I left it. So I tried turning on the tap and there was no water. So I turned around and said, this is very strange. I mean, Mr. Price, if I calling you at Starcom until I have a problem with Dennis, you're, as a manager, your duty is to listen to me. Don't tell me, well, you know what, I don't like it. I don't calm me down that word with West. Judge me by myself. You hear what I tell you? And that's what happened this morning when they called Water Authority. Well, they sent out a truck a while ago. Miss Nose was very nice, and she sent out a truck. So the judge saw the truck come out, the water come out. I said, sweetheart, the water is back on, so we must be comfortable. But don't sit down and expect Dennis and the boy to do your work when you pay to get a job due. So let me tell you something. You have a good morning and a good day. I do love you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Thank you. I just received this note here from a WhatsApp here from Canada, and this person sent it from their ticket, apparently, and it shows the taxes. It's Canada Airport Improvement Fee, then there's an Air Traveler Security Charge, a Fuel Charge, a Canada Harmonized Sales Tax, then there's the Value Added Tax, then there's the Airport Facilitation Fee, a passenger service charge, and a security fee. All those taxes. And quite frankly, here we are very similar in terms of taxes as well. And just let me correct myself, is because it's 35 US to, if you're going to a Caribbean destination, and 70 US if you are going extra regional. It's expensive, and it's not only here in it's not only here in the Caribbean, but air travel is expensive. Anyhow, we go to the next call because we have a full plate of calls. Good morning. You're on the air.
Top of the day to you, sir.
Long time no hear, sir. How are you?
I am pretty good, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a concern. I heard it up to this morning on your station. The Government Information Service put out an advertisement where it gives directions for turning left. And I believe this is the first left. It goes on to instruct on turning right. Now, I know of no roundabout in Barbados where one turns right. It is not possible. It matters not how many exits there are to a roundabout, you can only turn left. And I would like GIS to get that corrected. Now, another thing, every new Minister of Transport gets to put his name in a publication that the Ministry publishes. I think the next one due out, I may be corrected on this, is the fifth edition of this publication. Now, to my certain knowledge, we drive on the left-hand side of the road. Therefore, overtaking should occur to the right of the person who is on the left. For example, driving along the highway, you see people doing slow speeds in the right-hand lane, forcing others to overtake them on the left. And the way I understand how one uses the road, you should never have to overtake on the left. what some people call undertake. It is really correct for those who are driving slow or have no way to turn to keep to the left side of the road so that others can overtake them. Now, there's another point I would like to make on this. And I hate to compare Barbados to anybody else, but in the UK, where we get most of our laws from, they have over 12,000 roundabouts. But only one regulation governs each one of them. In Barbados, we have about 40 roundabouts, and it would appear that at each of the 40 roundabouts, we have a different rule that applies. I would love if the new minister in this new government could make it possible that at each roundabout, one rule applies. It matters not whether it's a small roundabout or large roundabout. One rule should apply to each. If England can do it, we can do it. And I don't know if you want to add anything, sir.
When you say about different rules at our roundabouts, and the roundabouts on the highway, I know that people still jam bus. I have my thoughts on that, but people still jam bus. But as far as I know, quite frankly, there's only one rule on the highway, to a roundabout. You give way to the person on the right.
Yeah, that is one of the written rules. You give way to persons on the right. So, but if you go to some roundabouts and just merely observe, you will see that people... I'm going to use the roundabout at Orange Hill, the bottom of Orange Hill, as a guide. The people coming from the north tend not to even slow down or stop when they get to their junction. They treat it as if it is a straight road. And likewise, those coming from the south or Bridgetown, they do the same thing. Whereas the people coming from Orange Hill or from Greenwich Village, they are, forced to stop to allow these fast-moving vehicles to go their way. Now, if you are, let us say, by Greenwich Village, and you're there before the fella who's coming from Bridgetown side, he has no real right to go ahead before you, because you were there before him. And
plus you're at the roundabout and you should give way to the person on the right. And the man coming from Bridgetown.
Only the person on the right in the roundabout, not the person on your right. Full stop.
Fair enough.
That's
where common sense and basic survival needs to apply. I mean, we can have as many rules as we want. And rules, of course, should be observed because they're put in place to preserve life and limb. But at the same time, common sense got to happen too. And we hope people drive on the roads these days, there ain't much common sense at all.
I understand that point that you're making. I would not quarrel with that.
The concern I really have... Mm-hmm. And I'm very glad you're raising this point. The concern I really have are the road markings. I don't know if you've really noticed, but
that is
endless road markings you could hardly see. You can't see the ones for zebra crossings. A lot of them seems the paint. I don't know if a quality paint was used, but the paint seems to just go after a short while. And then there are a lot of these stops that need. To be properly marked, not only at roundabouts, but I mean all over the place, wherever you go. That is something that I think needs to be done, preferably, of course, on a Sunday when there's less traffic on the road, so they wouldn't do it in the middle of a Monday or Tuesday morning. They did some months ago in Wilde. I had the whole place in a mess, but these road markings really need to be done. It's really long overdue.
Right. You mentioned Jambuster just now.
Mm.
and not to ignore the point. In the fourth edition of the ministry's publication, Jambusto was not mentioned at all. And the editions that come out supersedes the last editions. So you cannot have a fourth edition that does not speak to Jambusting, and then refer to it because the third edition speaks to it. That is wrong.
Mm.
Now, it is interesting that we had a commissioner of police who instructed his officers at the time not to jambust. And I don't want to go too deeply into that since I was married into his family. But the point about it is the police are there to uphold the law. And if the law said you jambust, then you jambust. It's simple as that. No officer should be telling his other officers not to follow the law. I mean, that is their duty. That's their role in society, to uphold the law. Anyway, let me just make the point. I want to make the point on the publications, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I happen to know, having worked in that ministry, that when the publications are done, thousands of them are printed, and they usually find some room to put them in and lock them up. I honestly don't understand that the sense of that, because these are things that should be given out when people go to renew their driver's license. Well, thankfully, we don't have to renew our road traffic or road licenses from the 1st of July anymore. But even people going for driving tests, they should be given the booklet instead of keeping them locked up in cupboards that nobody sees for years. I will bet you now that by the time the fifth edition comes out, there will be thousands of the fourth edition that will have to be destroyed. I honestly do not understand the sense of it.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for your call. It was nice hearing you, but I just want to read some WhatsApp messages because your call did generate quite a bit of messages. One person here is saying, I live in the north and travel that road regularly. That's what we were talking about, the roundabout in Orange Hill. And I don't see that happening. Those on the right are the ones who proceed. Then the others follow once the right is clear. Another person here is saying, Mr. Gibbs, you turn left in the right lane. The roundabout. Thanks. And another person here, I truly believe they use the wrong paint in Barbados for the roads. The paint fades in weeks, and this is to, you know, to paint the major stops and everything. And I agree with you totally, sir. And this other person here is saying the non-standard roundabout is a real issue, particularly with the Garfield Sobers one. They have a uniquely maddening regulation where both lanes coming from Sargent's Village are allowed to exit the right exit and go towards Wildey. No other roundabout has this, and it causes endless problems with all others on the highway. The only way to exit using both lanes is if you are going straight. Anyhow, based on all these remarks I'm seeing, and there are more here, but based on all these remarks, I really think that the whole idea of how we use roundabouts needs to be revisited, because one of the things that Mr. Gibbs did not mention just now, but which I'm sure many of us who use the road early on morning or sometimes in the evening rush see, there are a lot of fender benders. A lot of people touch one another because there's a lot of misunderstanding of who should be going in which direction. And, you know, a public awareness announcement, I think, needs to be done. And it should be done not just using just television or radio, but also the social media, because a lot of people get the information these days on their phones. And you can easily have like a little diagram thing that you have on WhatsApp so that people can pick it up and they can show by diagram how you should be using the roundabout. It's really overdue because people are really using these roundabouts badly. And we shouldn't wait when somebody gets seriously hurt before we then take action. Anyhow, we'll take another call. Good morning, you're on the air.
Bless you, good morning to you, Sanka.
Mr. Agriculture, how are you today, sir?
Boy, I'm holding on.
You're getting some nice little rain.
Oh, you're not so good.
Yes, but, man. I got a few things home plant too, so and they're growing nicely.
But the monkeys are getting the trouble.
No, man, the most trouble you get from is the human ones. But I think you know that too, eh?
2 foot monkey or 4 foot monkey. Anyhow, Sanka, but I have to give the gentleman, because I spoke to Mr. Johnson yesterday, and just let me tell Mr. Johnson, I accept his constructive criticism with good faith and going forward down the road.
He acknowledges that, sir.
Mr. Agriculture and him, we are good, because I don't want a body in my heart. When I look around and I see all the people that dead and gone and left you and I, don't care how big your funeral is, nobody don't starve you. So, but I'm still here and we are breathing, so we can't get a whole people in your heart for little frivolous things. So constructive criticism will come your way, and you got to receive it in good faith, like, you know? And okay, we are all one brass tack family for a long time, and these things will happen from time to time. But agriculture is good, and I respect Johnson and all the moderators there. Just sometimes you get, you know, hot in your contribution.
All right, sir, you made your point. Anything else you want to share with us?
Yeah, I must tell you that I am concerned with the level of violence I'm seeing coming from young people. You're a father, I am a father, Mr. Johnson is a producer and telephonist and whatever. He's a father as well. And I'm sure that it is sad to see, because last week I saw a group of young men all got sent up, got remanded, and then this week again, I think 3 or 4 more, and the charges were very similar. I don't know if you know the situation I'm speaking about.
From 11 years old.
Oh my God, Shaika, that hurt me to the core. And I mean, when I see that as a parent, and I got a boy child as well, and I know all, you know, the old people tell all a girl would do is bring home a grandchild to you, but the boys now are finding themselves in all the most disgusting, deplorable things that you could ever think. And that got a lot to do with peer pressure and trying to fit in. So I think that by sending them in prison and dogs or wherever they go, I don't think that is reforming them. I think that's making them bitter and more angry. And then when they come back into society, they seem to rebel.
But having said that,
uh-huh,
what lesson can you teach that person?
You see, everybody will have their different views on what is reforming and bringing back some person to understand where they have gone wrong.
What would you have done?
Well,
if you were a magistrate,
uh-huh,
and some young people came in front of you for whatever, stealing whatever, they've been made the charge, okay, you have the option of giving them bail or not giving them bail. What would you have done in terms of trying to teach them a lesson?
But I can be honest with you from my heart. You know, in every situation will be the same as a man sitting on a bench. Sometimes you've got a lot of power in your hand. Sometimes you can abuse power, or sometimes you can be sympathetic. But I can be honest with you. First thing you've got to do with them, whoever they offended as children, they will have to go in front of those individuals.
Stop. No. Stop. I've got to stop you there.
All right.
They have been charged.
All right.
They have not been. They have not had the chance to plead guilty or not, because I can't remember all the facts of the case. But let's assume they were indictable. So in any, I'm assuming here, because as I said, I can't recall all the facts of the case. But the point is that they have been charged. Mm-hmm. It's not a case of note right now. They're admitting guilt, or they have proven their innocence in any way. They've been charged. So let's assume. Let's assume right now for this conversation, and I'm saying that not necessarily for you, but I'm saying that for the people who are listening, because somebody who would be able to pick up the paper and say, well, this and that and that. I'm not dealing with that case. We're dealing now with 6 or 7 youngsters who go in front of a magistrate.
In general, the
charge is indictable.
Right.
So that means they cannot plea one way or the other. Okay? So, and you, Mr. Agriculture, you are the magistrate. You can either grant them bail or you can remand them. Mm-hmm. What would you do and why?
Let me tell you what I could do. If they had different conditions, you know, you see the paragraph with the defense force basis,
mm-hmm,
if there are places up there that may have cells, because I know if their cells get trouble, they get locked down, they can't go home on weekends, whatever. I know that for a fact. So what I'm saying is, if you can find places like with these hardcore soldiers, because you know they got sergeants, they can got big people to make sure that everything is going the right way, I would put them in that place where they can drill, where they can do bring people like just counselors to talk with them, do some good hard chores. I mean, a little bit of work, fark some garden beds, plant some food. Because we're going to be putting them to sit down. They got to bathe, they got to eat, they got to use water. I'm not going to say it because everybody can say, you're taking the people's children now to slave drive them. It is not that. But they have offended society. They have.
No. They have not offended society. They have not been proven guilty.
Yeah, but you understand that.
They have not been proven guilty. Don't forget.
It's
an indictable charge.
Yes.
Okay? So. They're not that. As far as we're concerned, their guilt or innocence has not yet been proven.
Yeah, but what they would do with them in the interim, because sometimes suppose now that the individuals know at the end of 2 year time, because the system here is very bad, it takes very long, and it drags through the mud. You know that too, Sanka. But what I'm saying is, all how you look at it, it is a sticky situation. But I want to say is that if you know personally in your heart that some youngsters commit some hardcore offenses and do bad things, I don't think that prison is always the right place for them. I think that there are other places where they can be reformed.
But where are those other places? Before you answer, because we keep going on in circles here.
Yeah.
The point that you're raising and the point what I'm really trying to get to here is a magistrate has very little option other than give you bail or remand you.
Correct.
Okay? And because you're either going to remand the person, if the person is old enough, 16 plus, you go to Dodds, the big yard. If
Correct.
You are under that age, you go to the small yard, which is the government industrial school.
Correct.
But and then they would then have to rely on the people who run those institutions to have a program in place to help those youngsters in some form or fashion during their term on bail.
Correct.
Okay? What I think I'm hearing from you, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you feel that in such cases, the person should not be placed in, especially at that age, in either the big yard or the small yard. Maybe they should go someplace else.
That is correct.
Where it's like a boot camp sort of situation.
Correct. You're understanding
right. Right? They can, but you see, there's not that option available.
I understand.
And why I simply went through this exercise with you is because if I remember, and I'm going back now to the particular specific case that we started dealing with as against dealing with our scenario, the magistrate, and I'm speaking out of correction, but I think she wanted to make the point of showing them what it is like being in that sort of situation where you've been remanded, and that will help teach you a lesson to make you understand you shouldn't be strained like that indeed guilty.
Thank you. I know I had a little time, but I'm not going to cross you. Let me tell you something. Sometimes we may think that sending those fellas to prison is going to make them better. It's make some of them worse. Because I don't only come to brass tacks because I don't have nothing better to do. I liaison with people every day. I talk with people from the length and breadth of Barbados. So those who know me personally, some people shout me and they don't even know them. And I speak to them. That's the kind of person I am. But what I'm saying is sometimes we send these persons to prison, take that they will be rehabilitated, and bring them back in society. Sanka, they come up worse sometimes. They come up full of anger. They come up full of bitter. And then the people that they love, when they went up there, they come back out hating because they have think that society has failed them. And that's the direction I'm going. I know you understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
It's a ticklish situation.
It is.
But it's also very hard and harsh to see young people as a father, as a parent, as a mentor, whatever you want, but it has in those situations. I'm not saying when you do wrong, you must allow children to know that you are, let them understand you have been wrong and there are consequences for doing wrong. But I think that we have to look at means of ways of rehabilitating these young people to make them better citizens, because at the end of the day, these are the future people who are going to take care of us when we get old and run this country. Like, that's all the contribution that I
And you know, we're in real trouble, boy.
And we're in a lot of trouble. We're in a lot of trouble with the young people. And you understand clearly where I'm going. I thank you. And God bless you. You have a good day.
You too, sir. We take a commercial break at this time.